This is the Saxo Market Call, the daily financial markets podcast, across asset classes and around the world.
Hello and welcome to the Saxo Market Call. It's Tuesday, 4th of July, 2023. Market's pretty steady here. We had a very uneventful session, holiday shortened in the U.S. yesterday, although there were some pretty big moves in things like Tesla, which you covered in yesterday's call, Peter. But looking over, I thought it was a bit interesting looking over at Europe yesterday. We didn't see that big follow through from the Friday session into the European indices so much. And Asia, at least Japan, was a bit downbeat overnight. Looking at that German DAX chart I put up there on slide two, we're not in the same place technically as we are in the U.S. here locally, where we've seen the S&P ripping to a new cycle high, fed by very easy financial conditions, as we discussed yesterday. And some pretty remarkable performances there, Peter, on the Saxo equity theme baskets. Looking at the top of the list, the green transformation and the bubble stocks, makes you wonder what's gonna stop this. Good sentiment and good cheer here.
Yeah, it seems like the positive sentiment that we've had in semiconductors and AI related stocks have rippled to other segments of the equity market, because bubble stocks is not only related to AI at all. It's a positive expression of what to expect from technology and hyper growth, high duration type companies. Green transformation is a different part of the technology space, which is related, of course, to the green transformation. So in that basket, we have EV makers, we have fuel cells, hydrogen, we have recycling, basically everything that it relates to the green transformation. And you can see that was pretty big, and it came off yesterday with, we had three upside surprises on Q2 deliveries of battery electric vehicles from Tesla, BYD, and Rivian. Put in here on slide three, I ended up writing a longer piece, which you can find on analysis.saxo. If you go to my hotspot, you can find the latest note there. And I think to some extent, our electric vehicle adoption has hit some type of an inflection point. I think I think the oil market is interesting that the prices continue to be so subdued. I know there's a lot of factors in play here. There's, of course, the Russian oil flowing to the markets, lack of coordination in the OPEC Plus. We had the cuts yesterday, both in Saudi Arabia and Russia. We have the weak industrial uptick in China. We had the news yesterday from the FT that, you know, the fragmentation game and Vietnam really very fast here, becoming a big manufacturing hub and taking market share away from China. So a lot of factors in play. But if you look at the adoption curve here on slide three, you can see that in the past 13 quarters, and keep in mind that the Q2 data point here for 23 only includes three EV makers figures. So we're lagging a lot of the data points here, and we already crossed 250,000 barrels per day in demand destruction from passenger vehicles on EVs alone. And then, as you can see, this little graphic here is actually based on the World Economic Forum, which is projecting that we'll have a 2.5 million barrels per day demand reduction by 2025 from these four channels alone. So we have two and three wheelers, which is actually the part of the EV adoption have been the fastest and the least talked about, because there's no publicly listed available companies. But the Chinese manufacturers have been really good at pushing out these two and three wheelers, and they adopted very widely in Asia. You can see they already have sucked out quite a considerable amount of all demand destruction. We have buses and commercial vehicles, and then EV adoption is the big one. And I also say in the article that I think the technological advances will accelerate this EV adoption much faster than expected. And Toyota is actually out today announcing that they actually see a path to commercializing solid state technology in their electric vehicles by 2027. They've made some great breakthroughs there, and they're touting a battery with a 1200 kilometer range and recharging or fully charging between 5 and 10 minutes. And as you said, John, in our chat, this is a kiss of death instant kiss of death to ICEs across the globe, if that's really true. Also because Toyota, together with Volkswagen, already had a huge existing manufacturing footprint and can really, I suspect, ramp up production pretty fast if they get this right. So I think we're at an inflection point. And I think countries like Saudi Arabia, Russia, Iraq, Iran will face some pretty dire consequences of this. And I know we are still small numbers, but it is the marginal changes that really sets the prices here. So I don't know what your thoughts are, and John, I've been thinking deep about this in the past couple of days. I think there are many fascinating aspects of this, both geopolitically, but also for the markets overall.
Yeah, two observations. As noted, there was a recent story that there was a Volkswagen plant that was idled because they're simply not... they don't need to produce as many EVs because the demand is not there. Was it in the UK where the anxiety is around the infrastructure of charging? So that infrastructure is key. And I think connected with that is what is the fuel that is driving the electricity production that goes into those electric vehicles. I just pulled up a depressing statistic from last year's, or it's the most recent one. It's been out in the recent couple of weeks here. This used to be run by BP, the statistical review on energy, covering very widely and very deeply all energy sources around the world, noting that coal production had reached a record in 2022 at 8.8 gigatons of coal. And so if we're building all these Chinese, in the case of China, which is very largely the electricity grid there, run on coal, and you're charging an EV with coal, what's the global imprint? Sure, it still affects the crude oil picture. But yeah, we need nuclear. We need other sources of electricity to drive this. So yeah, I think the infrastructure will be key. But yes, these batteries, if this tech is realized, there's no reason to have an internal combustion engine anymore, especially that combination of greater range and quick recharge. The anxiety is not just around the range. It is also that, oh my gosh, if I want to go on a road trip, I'm going to have to sit every couple hours. I'm going to have to sit for half an hour while my battery recharges. So yeah, but it's still very interesting observations. And yeah, I think you're right. I think the adoption curve could prove more aggressive than we expect. But moving swiftly along, not much to cover at all in FX. We had an RBA meeting out overnight where there was no hike. The majority of, the market was only pricing about 15% odds for a hike. It did not happen. Aussie actually sold off quite a bit, but in the end, the guidance was unchanged and front-end rates in Australia were unchanged as well. Australian dollar picking back up, I think actually in large part due to a pretty significant strengthening move in the Chinese renminbi. Maybe we'll get back to that story a bit later in the podcast, Peter, on the new export controls on a couple of interesting materials out of China. But that was about all the action. And I pulled up a Uranaki chart just as an interesting one to follow here, whether this is forming a head and shoulders pattern. I think we would need to see the continuation of the recent a strong risk sentiment globally, and a recovering outlook in Europe. And, of course, crude oil prices would be a helpful thing there, too. Speaking of the outlook for the economy and the way that we're seeing all of these, you know, there's been a fresh wave of tightening from the Fed, or in anticipation of tightening of Fed as well, I'd say, priced into the forward curve. And we just continue to see all of the yield focus at the front end of the curve, that long end just staying anchored. And we've reached this remarkable inversion, as you're pointing out on slide 5. So, what is your outlook from here for the yield curve?
Well, John, at this point of time, I expect the yield curve to continue to flatten, bear flatten. It means that 2-year yields will continue to drive higher. While the long part of the yield curve can drop in case we have economic data, weak economic data, or it can slowly rise, but the outcome will be the same, bear flattening, which means more yield curve inversion. But let's touch upon what really means for investors, for real money. So if we have a bear flattening of the yield curve, it means that short-term maturities might come at a better price in the near future. So there might be a more appealing entry point at this time, but it might not be relevant for those investors that are looking to build a bond ladder with various maturities, because already by now, short-term bonds offer an appealing return. And I think the biggest point is also that duration will bring bigger risks, because as we've seen these days, the long part of the yield curve has continued to rise, and bonds with higher duration are more sensitive to interest rate changes. So it might definitely not be a good moment to add on duration on somebody's portfolio. And then lastly, John, for whoever was looking to engage into a barbell, it's a bond trading strategies that goes long on short-term bonds to take advantage of higher yields, and also buys longer-term bonds, so takes duration in order to take advantage of convexity. Well, that trade might be needed to be postponed in the last quarter of the year. But John, I'm going to take you on slide number 6, because right now I've been talking about the US yield curve, but what's happening with yield curves in Europe, and specifically with the German yield curve and the UK yield curves? Well, they are both flattening. And on slide number 6, I put down the 2-year swap spreads for the UK, Germany, and the US. And why did I want to see that? Because 2-year swap spreads are the difference between the 2-year swap and their correspondent cash product. And when they are elevated, they are telling me that the cash market has to catch up with expectations. So just to be blunt, you know, like 2-year yields need to rise if the 2-year swap spread is elevated. And as you can see, the UK and the German 2-year swap spread is very much elevated, trading around 68 basis point, while US 2-year swap spread, it's slightly lower. So what this chart is telling me is that the yield curve inversion will accelerate in Europe at a certain point this quarter or on the last quarter of the year, the inversion of the yield curve in the US might be in the last stretch.
All right. Yeah. So it is interesting to note that stretched swap spread, as you point out there on that slide. And the Bank of England priced to do the most additional hiking for the cycle relative to any other central bank. And interesting if they feel like they can deliver. So far, the UK economy holding up reasonably well through that. Now, the story I wanted to highlight, there's almost nothing to cover on the macro calendar. Again, US markets are closed. The rest of the week is going to be interesting, and we look at those data points on slide 7 through the end of the week and the last couple of podcasts. But Peter, I just wanted to bring in the one story. We have a little bit around that. This China looking at export controls on two materials or elements, gallium and germanium. Very, very low volumes of these things being used, but they're key in sort of some very high-tech applications for gallium and semiconductors, phone and TV screens, solar panels, and some military applications. And in the case of germanium, fiber optics, night vision, solar cells, space-based solar cells, those sort of satellites, et cetera, some really exotic stuff here. And it's not about the rarity per se, these elements, but it's that they're a bit difficult to process. And China sits on 94% of gallium processing and 83% of germanium processing. An interesting sign of this tit-for-tat in what we call the global fragmentation game. China, of course, exports to China of key semiconductor technologies in particular has been a focus, and this is obviously a partial response to that. So I don't know if you wanted to bring anything else into that conversation, if there are also any equity angles on some of this.
Sure. I mean, these export controls and these two specific materials come after the Dutch government realigned themselves with the US government stance on the semiconductors, with these deep ultraviolet DUV machines used for, which, you know, the Dutch government has put down export controls and ASML to export those to China, and that would severely hampen China's own development of their own chips, which is needed if the US goes along and make more curbs. We've talked about the NVIDIA story, just waiting for that maybe to explode. If that happens, then they need to develop their own chips, and that requires the advanced machinery. So if they also locked out of that. And then, of course, the gallium and germanium materials are part of what the EU Commission has designated as the 14 CRMs. And CRM is not customer relationship management as we're used to in the business world, but the critical raw materials. So there are 14 of those designated by the EU. And gallium and germanium are part of that list of 14 raw materials. And it's not an accident that China have chosen exactly those two, because I found a pro mine data map of where we have deposits of these 14 critical raw materials, and we only have one gallium mine in Europe as of 2016 at least, and that was in Poland, and we have very few germanium. And so I think it's a tit for tat response to the SML, but I would also argue that I think the globalization and the calm trading relationships that have been in place in the world made Europe quite relaxed and lazy. So we didn't do any exploration or extraction and refining ourselves. We just led that to China. And since the war in Ukraine broke out, there have been a lot of action in the EU on drumming up and secure own supply. So maybe that's also, there's a window of opportunity for China if they want to exert pressure on Europe. There is a window of opportunity until Europe can build out their own supplies of that. And the US is in a better position. They have a very big gallium deposit in Texas. So US, as always, is a little bit in a better situation on these things than Europe. But I think Europe will be able to find these deposits. It's just about putting in the time and effort and resources to actually find them, extract them, and refine them.
Yeah, so interesting to see, again, tit for tat, and whether this escalates to some new area down the road. It seems like inevitably it just might. So we'll follow that story, and we'll see where things stand tomorrow. They'll stand the same place in the case of the U.S., but other markets are open, and we'll be back tomorrow with the next Saxo Market Call.
Thanks for listening. This has been the Saxo Market Call. For feedback and questions, reach out to us on Twitter at SaxoMarketCall or by email, marketcall@saxobank.com.